This Augusta Golf Show podcast is brought to you by Gerald Jones Audi. Inspire design, where emotion takes shape. 4022 Washington Road in Martinez.
Here at Audi, we have some good news to share with the world. Unfortunately, our good news is bad news for our competition. So to soften the blow, we brought in the very best at delivering bad news. Someone's mom.
The Audi A4 is the biggest, fastest, most fuel-efficient car in its class. Oh, honey, I know it's hard to hear, but it'll be okay.
I'm David Jones, inviting you to test drive an impressive new Audi A4 Premium today at Gerald Jones Audi, 4022 Washington Road in Martinez, or visit us on the web at GeraldJonesAudi.com. Audi, truth in engineering.
Well, Peter Kessler is a golf historian, worked at Golf Channel, PGA Tour Network. Got the number one podcast in the game, the Peter Kessler Show, available at revolutiongolf.com. We always catch up with Peter after a major championship, so here we go. It's a pleasure to welcome Peter Kessler back to the Augusta Golf Show. Hello, Peter.
Oh, it's great to be with you, my friend. How are you?
I'm wonderful. Everything good with you?
Not too bad. Working on a couple of things, trying to move forward, but I would think it'd be unfair of me to complain too much.
All right. Overarching thoughts out of the Open Championship.
Well, you know, it's funny. In reading the press last night and today, you wouldn't have thought it was the same tournament that you just watched. I mean, Randall Chambly is from the Golf Channel is ranting that the way that Jordan Spieth threw away the tournament was by hitting into too many bunkers off the tee. Well, I went back and took a look at it. He landed in three pot bunkers out of 64 drives. Three out of 64 to be in slight trouble doesn't sound like a throwaway to me. And then, you know, you take a look at Jordan Spieth's putting, and you realize he had, you know, 6-3 putts and a 4-putt, but Zach had 4-3 putts. Louis had 5-3 putts. So everybody was 3-putting a little bit. Jordan Spieth just didn't get it done. He didn't choke, as so many people are suggesting today, which just makes me crazy because he didn't do anything like choking. He just didn't get done the things that he wanted to get done at the very end, but that's not choking. That's just golf. I mean, the par 4 17th is a par 5 hole. That's why the stroke average was just under 5. And for Jordan Spieth to miss an 8-footer for par, well, you can't make all your 8-footers. And it's interesting, you know, Jordan Spieth's the number one putter in golf. He's got the best putting average. He's 20th in strokes gained putting against the rest of the field. He's number one in 3-putt avoidance. But yet from 4 to 8 feet, where he missed some putts this week, he's 168th on tour from 4 to 8 feet, and that's your number one putter. So he's got one little area that's problematic, and that was exposed a few times this week, but it was exposed for everybody because it wasn't easy putting. It's not that the greens are so undulating, it's that they're so big and you have so much approach putting to do and longer approach putts than guys are used to. I thought Zach Johnson, it was fabulous. Here's a guy who doesn't hit it very far. He's got an unusual swing. I think the glasses make him look like somebody you don't want to root for. It's not a pleasant look, those reddish pink glasses that he wears, and it makes him look a little bit like a bug or an ant. And I think people are turned off by that, but I think they were turned on by his golf game. I thought they were turned on by the way that he reacted to the win. I thought they were turned on by how he handled his acceptance speech. And I thought the Old Course stood up wonderfully well. They're always saying it's too easy, it's too this. You know, 15 under, the guys shoot 15 and 20 under and 25 under on tour at regular tour events all the time. So why is 15 under such a huge number? It's not. Why shouldn't the winner of a golf tournament, if the course is not set up unfairly, be unable to shoot 68 each of the rounds, 69 each of the rounds? The winner should be able to have the course yield to his brilliance. And it yielded to brilliance this week. And 15 under was as deep as the thing got. I thought it was a wow. Anything between 8 and 15, 8 and 16 under at a championship where you're hitting wedges into half the holes, I thought was a number that made the Old Course stand up very well.
I hate this question, but I feel compelled to ask it. With this win, is Zach Johnson a Hall of Fame candidate?
I don't think so. Mm-hmm. I was stunned. so many people said, yep, there he is, Hall of Famer. He's got 12 wins, and a bunch of them are the John Deere. I mean, yes, he won at Augusta. Incredible. Yes, he won at the Old Course. Double incredible. To have those two on your resume is unreal. But not when you only win 12 tournaments altogether. Now, if he gets to 15, then I'll change my tune, but only because the tune has changed as to what really gets you into the Hall now, which is basically nothing. You know, if you're 15 wins in a major, you're in the Hall of Fame. Freddie Couples, you win no tournaments in the United States and no major championships. Colin Montgomery, you're in the Hall of Fame. I mean, I think the absolute minimum is 20 wins and two majors, so I wouldn't have Davis Love in the Hall of Fame. I wouldn't have Lanny Watkins in the Hall of Fame. I wouldn't have Tom Kite in the Hall of Fame. I would just let Ben Crenshaw, and I just think the standards are way too simple. It's supposed to be the best players of the time. The best players of the time. Zach is not one of the best players of his time. He's slightly more, well, that's not fair. I was going to say slightly more than a journeyman pro, but until last week, until yesterday, he was a journeyman pro. I mean, the guy scrounged around on the mini tours for years. He wins second-class events on the PGA Tour, but now he's done something special. But I don't think it's entry. I think it's, gee, if Zach wins three or four more times, he might get into the Hall of Fame. But now, no, not even close, not even maybe.
We're talking with Peter Kessler, host of The Peter Kessler Show, available at revolutiongolf.com. I'm curious about this. We have a mutual friend who brought this up to me over the weekend. Did at any point during the tournament on Saturday, Peter, when nobody played because of the wind, was there at any point you kind of said to yourself, look, it's the British Open. That's the weather over there. Get your clubs. Go play golf.
Well, I think the problem was that the greens were too quick to handle the wind. I mean, you know, we saw what happened to Louis Oosthuizen. We saw the backup on the 11th hole when they decided to play for 30 minutes on Saturday morning, which was a grave error in judgment. I mean, it wasn't playable. They went out, it wasn't playable, and then they finally bring him in because it wasn't playable. So I didn't understand that. But
I think the weather
was a little too severe to be able to keep the balls on the greens. Otherwise, I'd say let them play.
Yeah, if balls weren't moving on the greens. I mean, heavy, windy days, it blows my ball into the water. That's just what happens. If balls weren't moving on the greens, it would have been, come on, boys, let's go play, right?
It would have been, come on, boys, let's go play, and it would have been absolutely fantastic because these guys would not have shot huge numbers in the wind. They know how to tack their way around the golf course. They know how to put it here, wind or no wind. They know how to get it on the green, wind or no wind, strong wind or light wind. They know how to play in that, hence the really good scores, because there was some pretty good wind the whole week, net-net, and yet the scores were, you know, pretty attractive relative to par, and there was a lot of guys at 9-under or better, so the course was yielding to brilliance. But yes, if the balls weren't moving, I'd say take them out, and there were some unfortunate decisions by the RNA with regard to their handling of that. But I thought that they made net-net the right decision.
I know you've played St. Andrews in the Dunhill Cup. Was it love at first sight, or was it an acquired taste?
Oh, it's an acquired taste, because the first time you play it, you think holes 2 through 6 are the same hole. They all run in the same direction. They all have blind tee shots over the exact same piece of looking mounds and turf. And you have similar clubs into all of those holes, except for the par 5 fifth. But, you know, even there you end up having a wedge for your third shot. So they're not very long holes. They all look exactly the same. They don't appear to be particularly interesting. And then you get to the 7th hole, and there's people hitting over your head because they're playing the 11th hole, and you go, what is going on here? And then you get to 8, not much of a par 3, 9, not much of a par 4, 10, not much of a par 4. And then the excitement begins on 11, but you don't know that until it actually happens the first time, and you appreciate holes 11 through 18 the first time, and you appreciate that you walk out of town and back into town at the end of the round, which you don't do anywhere else. But then I started to like it, because once I knew the second time where you needed to aim your drive, and I knew what was going to be down there because I had seen it before, then it was better. It's, you know, if you have blind shots or you have a few shots on a course where you say after you hit it, oh, well, if I had known that thing was there, I wouldn't have hit that shot. But St. Andrews doesn't have a lot of that. Once you know where the ball is going to land and where the bunkers are, it's an eminently playable golf course, and good drivers can really keep the ball in play. But then I started to like it more and more and more, and realized holes 2 through 6 are not the same hole. They have different characteristics. They have different humps and bumps. They just happen to go in the same direction, so they seem fairly similar because they look a little bit alike. But I ended up falling in love with the course. I ended up, when I used to go play in the Dunhill Links, the way it worked was, on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday of the Dunhill Links, they shut down Carnoustie, Kings Barnes, and the Old Course for the participants in the Dunhill Links. You can play any of those three courses all 3 days, anytime you want. So, you know, the smart move is you play St. Andrews Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. Then you play it one more time when the tournament starts, the Thursday, Friday, Saturday, because there's three courses, so you play the Old Course once. But if you make the cut, and that's 20 out of 168 teams, two-man teams make the cut, then you play the Old Course again on Sunday with the low qualifiers and the individual part of the tournament. And it's a thrilling thing. I made the cut with my partner, Thomas LeVay. This is a hard-to-believe story, but it's true. I was a 6 handicap when I went over this 1 year. I had worked on my game all summer. I was legit 6, and I got 18 shots over the first 3 days, and I made 17 pars and a bogey on my shot holes. So that helped our team 17 shots. Thomas LeVay helped the team 4 shots. And now I played rubbish on some of the other holes, but he played terrific, and or well enough to support me. But I was making net birdies everywhere that I was making pars. It was almost hard for him to help me. But we made it into the Sunday, but he missed the cut individually. So I said, I want half your winnings because you wouldn't have won anything if we hadn't gotten into the team part of the competition on Sunday. He won like 15,000 pounds. I got nothing. He told me I was an amateur, but we played behind Colin Montgomery on a beautiful day, 70 degrees, no sweaters, one club wind, which is a perfect way to play the Old Course. And we played behind Colin Montgomery, who made 7 birdies in a row in front of us in the middle of his... It's a thrilling event to play in, and it's thrilling to play in a tournament at the Old Course.
He's Peter Kessler, host of the Peter Kessler Show, available at revolutiongolf.com. I always appreciate the time, and I love the stories. Thank you, Peter.
Oh, it's a great pleasure. I love being with you, and I'm happy that we'll be able to catch up in a few weeks after the PGA.